ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Is there any arrangement for Hindi translation? Kon Hindi anubad kar. Ah, take it. Already there? Almost. Principles for Establishing Varnashram Communities. Part 2. Did you get that? Based on application of principles for advancement in spiritual life, which are applied to establishing varnashram communities. Gradual development. Ado shraddha tatha sadhu sangha tato nartha nivritti syat tato nishtha ruchis tata atha saptish tato bhavo tata prema bhyudanshati sadha kana mayam prena pradurbhave bhavet kramaha. Kramaha gives the idea of step by step, from shraddha to prema, with specific stages in between, specific stages of consciousness. Graduality, gradualness, is also mentioned in yoga practice, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, shanai shanai ruparamed buddhya dhriti guhitaya. One should go gradually with intelligence. One should go upwards with intelligence and determination. So intelligence is certainly required and determination is certainly required. Intelligence is required in all aspects. First of all, to understand why we're doing this. Most people think, and do think, if they come to know about it, that the idea of varnashram living is unintelligent. When a person has been through the whole educational system for almost 20 years, if you include kindergarten, 20 years, and they're well set up and well qualified to make a success, or they may already be a success means you have a steady job, earning more money than most people, or it might be that you have a business. Success means you earn, to be earning more money than the average. That's, if you want to boil down what success means, that's it in modern terms. So if you're all set to do that, then why on earth would you, living with all the comforts that success buys, then it seems most intelligent to people whose intelligence is distorted to go and live without electricity, without all the comforts that modern civilization offers. This is a case of adharamam dharamam iti ya manyase tamasa vita. People in the mode of ignorance, they get everything back to front. They think dharma is adharma, adharma is dharma. So what they call intelligent, we're not saying they're unintelligent completely, because definitely requires some intelligence to make computers and build factories and superhighways, but it's misplaced intelligence and therefore it's unintelligent. The echo seems to be on. Kindly turn it off. Uh, You can play chess or solve crossword puzzles, and that requires use of intelligence, but it has no practical application except to keep the intelligence sharp. That you could say it's like physical exercise, it's mental exercise. But you keep the intelligence sharp for what? For performing activities which are of no ultimate good to us. That means apaswartha parayana, to be fully attached to something which is against our own self-interest. Now that is foolishness. And however intelligently we pursue our own non-self-interest, or rather that which is opposed to our self-interest, it's foolishness. So devotees have to be quite convinced of all this, which is possible, especially by reading Srila Prabhupada's books and associating with devotees who speak according to that. Because Srila Prabhupada made a point of this more than any previous acharya, as far as I've seen. And among us all here, Keshavananda Prabhu has read the previous acharyas, but they didn't harp on this point to the extent that Srila Prabhupada did. Of course, it's there in Shastra. Nunang pramata kurute ivi karma janasya moho yamahammameti. Then parabhavas tava dabodha. There are verses, yanisha sarva bhutanam. There are verses which, many verses, which point out the crass foolishness of materialistic people. But particularly pointing out the insanity that goes on under the name of modern civilization, that it will find especially from Srila Prabhupada's books. And of course, it's not only Srila Prabhupada who says this. There are many, actually not that many, secular writers also, who also point out that the modern world is crazy, but they don't have any shastric viewpoint. They still think that the purpose of life is to live peacefully and happily in this world. They don't have any higher principle. Or they may be Christians or something, but there are very few like that, Christians who are against this, or see the foolishness of modern society. But Srila Prabhupada, he saw it, he pointed it out, and he gave the real solution. Now, he especially pointed out the foolishness of modern civilization because everyone is enamored by it. And why are they enamored by it? Because of the promise of sense gratification that it offers. There's that purport, kamasya hinendriya pritya labho jiveta yavata. Jiveta tattva jignyasa. What's the last line? Yes. Yes, cheha narato karma bihi. Yeah. I believe it's in that purport. Srila Prabhupada gives a singeing critique of modern civilization in which everything, every field of activity is saturated with the prospect of sense gratification in politics, religion, social life, education, everything is singed, permeated with the idea of sense gratification. The politicians get voted in because they offer the voters sense gratification, but they can't satisfy them, and then the voters become dissatisfied and throw them out. And even in salvation, he says, that means that the whole idea of getting liberation from this world is also a sense gratificatory idea, it's a self-centered idea. So this whole modern civilization is a gross anartha. We just mentioned that term, anartha nivritti. The whole modern civilization, it works completely against the whole prospect of spiritual advancement. And although sense gratification is intrinsic in mainstream Vedic life also, as we learn from Bhagavad Gita that my brain is so dull that Nistraigunya Bhavaja, what's the first line of that? Chaigunya Vishayo Veda. Yeah, it's mostly pious people are concerned with going to the heavenly planets for sense gratification. But there is a process inbuilt to uplift people, whereas in the non-Vedic approach to sense gratification, there's no such thing. It just takes you down, 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 down. So we should have the intelligence to, it's actually very intelligent to cut out from this modern civilization, even if you're an atheist, which is unintelligent, and we don't recommend it. In fact, it's astonishingly unintelligent to be an atheist, but people who are atheists think that they're intelligent. Of course, it's also astonishingly unintelligent to be shouldn't say this, shouldn't get this recorded, to be a Christian or a Muslim or a Jew, because their concept of religion is so, well, stupid. And so people who think themselves more intelligent, they react by becoming atheists. But that's not the solution. It's going from one kind of foolishness to another. And actually it's more foolish to be. I don't know, it's difficult to say. The things you have to believe in if you're a religion following, and Hinduism also, is just full of all kinds of nonsense. So Srila Prabhupada gave true concept of religion, and yeah, even if one's a materialist, it's intelligent not to cut out, even if your goal of life is just to live peacefully and happily in this world, which isn't a very exalted goal of life, but it makes a lot more sense to get out of the cities, and especially the way the world is going. We've been warned about climate change and its dire consequences, that for years we've been warned. Well, it's right with us right now, as we can see from the non-summer that we're in. It's supposed to be hot now here, and the rain, which is going to spoil the present crops, and in the whole cycle of food production is going to be severely upset. So it makes a lot of sense. If you want to get away from the city pollution, the crime, and the stress of city life, go to the country, live simply. Get off the grid, as they say. Get off the grid means you don't have electricity. Get off the grid doesn't necessarily mean that means the electric grid, because with the electric powerhouse, and then the transfer, what do they call that? The reach of anyway, I can't remember. Sorry for my brain being so dull. The idea is that you don't have electricity from the national networks, or in America it's all privatized, everything privatized, even the prisons are privatized. It's a big business. That's why they have there are about 3 million people in prison in America. It's all a business. I guess the judges get paid something for every prisoner, everyone they send to prison. So yeah, you could also generate electricity by solar panels or other means, but even that means some entanglement. Then you have all gadgets which you have to pay for and this and that. So, but anyway, the idea of growing your own food is a very good idea. Getting away from the city and growing your own food, it's a very good idea, even materially. Because when the food crunch comes, then the city people are going to be most affected. At the present time, there's this proper... Well, it's generally thought that a farmer means someone who's stupid and they can't do anything more than grow some potatoes. But the farmer is going to be the most prestigious person when the food crunch comes. The person who knows how to grow food. So, intelligence and determination. I'll speak more about that. Determination, I'll speak more about that later. We go back to Ado Shraddha. First of all, we have to have faith that the goal can be attained. The goal in this couplet of verses by Srila Rupa Goswami is Krishna Prema. So we have to have faith that there is Krishna and there's Prema, and that's the goal of life. We don't see it much. Well, we did see it in Srila Prabhupada. That gave so much faith to the devotees. It's just his very personality, fully surcharged with Krishna consciousness. He wasn't just talking about it. He was Krishna consciousness in person. That's the meaning of the name Krishna Chaitanya. It means he is Krishna consciousness. But it seems very rare. And that's also, Rupa Goswami says, that's one of the characteristics of pure devotional service. Sudurlabha, very rarely attained. By Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy, it becomes easily attained. It means it's very rarely attained because one has to follow the right means. Otherwise, ananyas cheta satatam yomang smriti nityashah tasyaham sulabha partha nitya yuktasya yoginaha. For one who always thinks of me, yomang smriti nityashah, Krishna says it twice in two lines, in two different ways. And then for such a person, I'm very easy to attain. And again, nitya yuktasya yoginaha, for one who's always engaged in the yoga, bhakti yoga, it means clearly in this context. So it is very rarely attained. By bhakti, Krishna is easily attained. But by any other means, it's if one is attached to any other path, then it becomes very difficult to attain, unusual to attain Krishna. So in the same way that we have to have faith that, well, here I am with all my kam, krodh, lobh, moha, mada, matsari, all my sinful propensities, and I'm supposed to attain Krishna prema. Well, it seems, well, if we want to be realistic instead of overestimating ourselves, it seems like impossible. So similarly, the idea of establishing Daiva Varnashram communities, it may seem impossible. We have to start with faith that if we try, Krishna will help us. Krishna can make the impossible possible. And actually, before we started all these communities, that's what we always heard. It's impossible. You can't do it. No one will be interested. These gurukuls, no one's going to send their kid to a school in which there are no certificates given, no science, no normal education. No one's going to send their kids. But then we found there is interest in this. The people are interested. It's not that no one's interested and everyone's against it. So, although there are many obstacles, no doubt. But we have to start with faith that Well, Prabhupada wants it, it can happen, must happen. Prabhupada wants it, it can happen, should happen, and will happen. We can be the nimitta matra. We can take part in this, or we can say it's impossible and go through our life and die, and then someone else may come along later. But better to do it now. Sadhu Sangha, this point comes up again and again in discussing advancement in devotional life. It's of all the principles of devotional life, which 64 Chaitanya Mahaprabhu described to Rupa Goswami. And then he said that the 9 most important are the Navadha Bhakti, Shravanam Kirtanam. Then he said 5 are most important. And the first that he gave in the list is Sadhu Sangha. And ultimately he said, Taramadhe Sarva Shrestha Nama Sankirtan. That the topmost is Nama Sankirtan. So, Sadhu Sangha is required for advancement in devotional life. And actually these communities, they are meant to facilitate devotees having Sadhu Sangha. The idea is that devotees can live together and prosecute Krishna course. That means Sadhu Sangha. Because in urban life, we have that, devotees, most of them have it, much less than they have Asat Sangha, if we say in terms of time, a time of actually being with devotees and engaging in devotional activities. So that is a major purpose of having these communities, so that everyone can be a full-time devotee. Means we're living in association of devotees, and it actually becomes true that our work becomes our devotional service. But it's very difficult if we can say that our work is our devotional service if we're working as a software developer in some kami company. But it's very difficult to... We have to make some mental convolutions and somersaults to justify that, because the work is not being done directly for the pleasure of Krishna, it's being done for the pleasure of this Narayan Murti or this Premji Aziz, what's his name? Azim Premji, or it's being done. Ultimately, it gets passed up through parampara. There's your project manager, and he's got some manager, and then it goes through the board of directors, and then it comes up to Azim Premji, and he gets the money. And then by his mercy, he sends some money down, career prospects, and all this kind of thing. So there's no clear connection to Krishna. Whereas when we're living together with devotees and producing food or whatever we may be doing, it's clearly all done for the pleasure of Krishna. And actually the food that we grow, it's offered to Krishna. That's very pleasing to Krishna and to the devotees to offer food which is grown by them. I believe Vishwanath in his Patchong Pushpong Palang Toyam Bhagavad Gita purport mentions that. Do you remember that? That the food which is actually grown, fruit and flowers which are actually grown from the very beginning, with the idea that we're going to offer this to Krishna, that's most pleasing to Krishna. You can buy some worn out basi flowers from the market, and or some vegetables which are all full of chemicals, and you can offer that to Krishna. It's not as pleasing as that which you grow very carefully, see how it's coming up. There's a description in this book, Vamsidas Babaji, of this Ananta Vishwamba, he told me. I wrote it in that book. How he saw one nice papaya growing at Chaitanya Mart, and he was watching it very carefully. And then when it was perfectly ready, he picked it, And he didn't offer it to the deities at Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but he took it to Vamsidas. He said he had in his mind, I want to offer this to him. So he did. I don't know if he took permission from the temple authorities there, but probably didn't. He wasn't the kind of person who took permission from anyone, as I remember him. Ananta Vishwamba. So that's very pleasing to Krishna. So Adarshata Tatus and even in while growing, the plant is hearing the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. You can sing to the flowers as they'll grow better. Materialists don't believe this. Cows, plants, they all react if you have nice music, nice song. Some years ago, Prince Charles of England, who is an avid gardener, he admitted to the press that he sings to his flowers. And they all say, hey, crazy, crazy, crazy. Because they think that their idea is that, well, life is just chemicals. It's such a completely materialistic outlook. Their medicine is completely based on just chemicals. Some chemicals wrong, put some more chemicals in. That's it's a chemical approach to life. No wonder they can't understand what life is, because they can't see, they refuse to see anything beyond chemicals. So sadhu sangha, you can give the devotees association to all the plants and trees. That's also there. Haridas Thakur said to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you remember this? You're nodding your head like this. You know what I'm going to say? Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked Haridas Thakur, this comes in Chaitanya Bhagavata. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, all the human beings can be delivered by chanting Hare Krishna, but what all about all the other living entities? And Haridas Thakur said, they're also chanting. That when you chant Hare Krishna, you hear the pratidvani, the echo, that's actually the trees chanting Hare Krishna by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's influence. So there are all the living beings are delivered by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu going through the Jharkhand forest. All the tigers, the lions, the trees, they're all delivered by his chanting. So sadhu sangha. We should be in association of devotees who give us encouragement, obviously. Obviously, we want to do these projects with devotees who will encourage us and help us and cooperate. And we also, by living with devotees, what a difference. Those of you who have made the transition from urban life working with non-devotees, even though the non-devotees intrinsically, they may not be particularly nasty people. They're just normally nasty people, not very nasty people. Means the way of office politics tends to make people nasty. Otherwise, in the average Indian middle-class person, if you don't prick him too much by telling him that he's wasting his life and things like this. But they're nice people, but they're not devotees. They waste their time talking all nonsense. One godbrother of mine, Abhiram, he told me some years ago, he said he was working with some lawyers. I don't think he was actually a lawyer. He's definitely not a lawyer. I doubt if he was working in a lawyer's office, because he always did business throughout his life, as far as I know. We talked about some lawyers he was dealing with. And lawyers, educated men in America. So he said when they weren't working, when they had their coffee break or whatever, they'd talk about football, which in America means that violent game in which I wonder why they bother with a ball at all. They might as well just punch each other. and sex. And he said when he tried to talk to them about something more, not even spiritual, but intellectual, they just look at him like he was crazy. So people, even from the material point of view, people are going down and down and down. So sadhu sangha is very much required, especially in the modern society where normal people, what do? The normal male in the world today is seeing pornography on the internet. I would think so, because it's the biggest thing on the internet, so it means that most people are watching it. If it's the biggest thing, it means it's bigger than football. It's definitely bigger than cricket. Bigger than the news and politics. So it must be a normal thing nowadays. The majority of males, at least, are watching pornography. It's just normal. So sadhu sangha becomes all the more necessary. These whole projects become more and more necessary. Sadhu, anartha nivritti. Anartha means that which is pratikul. Pratikul yasya varajanam. Anukul yasya sankalpa. Pratikul yasya varajanam. So that which is in that which militates against the goal, which in this case is developing. Well, we're talking about developing self-sufficient farm communities, but that's definitely the goal, but with the aim of establishing an atmosphere suitable for developing Krishna consciousness. So we should always remember that our interest is in Krishna consciousness, not in farming per se. We're interested in farming so that we can create an atmosphere suitable for Krishna consciousness, but that farming, cow protection, living simply, because it's very conducive for Krishna consciousness, therefore we promote it. Now you may say, well, why didn't Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur promote it? Well, he did promote Varnashram. He said, I'm promoting Varnashram as much as it is suitable for helping our devotees advance in Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada took it a stage further. Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote about it. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur introduced visibly demonstrating the Brahmanatva, or the condition of being a Brahmin or Vaishnavas, by offering the Brahminical status, formally offering Brahminical status to Vaishnavas not born in Brahmin families. That's as far as he went. And Srila Prabhupada had a whole blueprint to reconstruct human society based on Varnashram principles. Another reason is it may not have been done previously, because even though India at the time, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had already undergone and was still undergoing many, many changes away from traditional society, but it was still quite possible to be Krishna conscious in that atmosphere without too many extrinsic disturbances, as in the modern age, where, for instance, even if you want to be Krishna conscious, you have to work so hard, long hours, that you just don't get time. So that's a major factor which wasn't present at the time of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, this extremely intense lifestyle of work, 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 and then having to commute to work, what, 1 hour, 2 hours each way, more. So that may be one factor also. So this, what is anartha? This whole modern civilization is an anartha. Everything about it. And the more we're in the consciousness of thinking that this modern civilization has something valuable to offer, then the more we need to be purified of that anartha. We may say, well, we have the opportunity to learn so many things about philosophy, and we can travel to the dhams and this and that. Yeah, we can learn so many things about philosophy, which we have to learn so that we can unlearn all the bad things that we learned. Otherwise, that was going on in every village, that the teaching of philosophy. Teaching of philosophy, everything can be localized. Now we can get everything on the internet, but we don't actually need all of that stuff. If we can get in local area, then this is what we're trying to set up, Varnashram communities, that we can turn out devotees who can teach. And traditionally, there were gurus like Ramanuja who traveled widely and initiated many people, but traditionally guru would be in a fairly small area, and they'd mostly stay in one place throughout the year, and they might travel once a year to their disciples who are spread out here and there, but not much, because there wasn't facility to travel much. So the purpose of human life was well served by such a system. And although there is facility nowadays for traveling all over the world, this and that, but it's not actually required for being Krishna conscious. Of course, that was required for Prabhupada to go to the West. He could have walked, I guess. It would have taken a long time, at least as far as Land's End. Well, no, you have to, the end of France, Brittany, opposite Land's End. This Lokanath Brahmachari, he walked from Bengal, he walked to Russia. There was some other Swami I read about in the 18th century, around the same time. His life story is going. He walked all over India, then he went up to Russia. But he came back, he said, because the Russian people, he said, they were nice, but they just wouldn't leave him alone. Wherever he went, there'd be crowds all around him. And because he was a Baba, with long, matted hair and all this, and it was something they couldn't imagine. So it's not impossible to go like that, but by walking, and then you could go by ship to America. So it could have spread that way also, theoretically, that some devotees took Krishna consciousness, just like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in India, in undivided India, as they call it. You'll still see that in someone's passport, Indian passport, someone is born 1939 in Karachi, undivided India, because that time it was part of India. So he also went, he traveled to places which are now in Pakistan. He went to Rawalpindi and places like that. Punjab, he came to this area several times. And then Madhav Maharaj, one of his prominent disciples, preached here, and still that Sri Chaitanya Gaura Math, it's still their main place of preaching here, isn't it, Punjab? So he could have gone like that through Afghanistan and slowly diffused. But anyway, Krishna had a plan that Srila Prabhupada came on a freighter ship to America, and he utilized the modern technological conveniences, as they're called, to spread the Krishna consciousness all over the world very quickly. Islam spread very quickly during the lifetime of Muhammad, and just after him, within 100 years of Muhammad's death, Islam had spread throughout the whole of North Africa and then east to the borders of India and into India. So they didn't need any modern technology to spread very quickly. Of course, Srila Prabhupada spread Krishna consciousness much faster than 100 years. But I mean, not only did they have outposts as we have in the Krishna consciousness movement, but the whole of North Africa became overwhelmingly Muslim for various reasons that have been analyzed. Not by the sword. People mostly welcomed them. They were fed up with the Christians. They were previously Christian. The point that with this whole modern civilization, we should see that the whole ethos that comes with it is, it works against our Krishna consciousness. So even if, all right, if we have electricity, then we can watch highly Krishna conscious things on TV like Chota Bheem, not really very Krishna conscious. Or we can have internet broadcasts and this and that, but the temptation to utilize it for other things is just not worth the risk. You can have your Srimad Bhagavatam discussion among yourselves. You don't have to have it via the internet. If the internet's there, use it. If we're in the cities, we'll utilize these things. But if we're establishing these communities, don't have it. Because once that comes, then everything else will come. There's no control over it. And also to have electricity means you have to, then you'll want all different kinds of gadgets and this and that. And this. Again, there's no enter. And people feel that, unless I have electric lights and electric mixie and electric this and that and everything else, and how can we live? And then you have to spend money for that. And to spend money, you have to produce more than we need for our basic requirements. Then to produce more for than you need for your extra requirements, then you have to use artificial fertilizers and machines and the whole. Then you just lose the whole point. So keep it simple. Some austerity is there, no doubt. But you get used to that. Largely, you get used to it. And that's conducive also for Krishna consciousness. Some austerity is conducive. So we should understand anartha in varnashram communities. And there's also the psychological anarthas of thinking that we need electricity, we need money in the bank and all kinds of things that we think we need, but we don't. Tato anartha nivritti sat tato nishtha ruchistata. So, by practical experience, we become very convinced and happy in doing what we're doing. And nowadays, Natha Gauranga Prabhu is being, before he was going around and talking about what we want to do, what we've started to do, but now it's started that he's being called to tell devotees what we're actually doing. And it's actually much more convincing than if you say, well, we want to do this. Okay, all right, we heard so many things. If you look at the old editions of Back to Godhead, you'll see so many projects that we're going to do, not just farm projects, all kinds of things. And that's the last you hear about it. It never happens. It's just some grandiose scheme that someone dreams up, and it never happens. So it's a bit like calling wolf, wolf, to say that we're going to do this, we're going to do that. But then when you're actually doing it and it's going on and you yourself can say, you can tell others with great conviction, yeah, this is, we're feeling Krishna's mercy, we're experiencing it, and we're very happy doing this. And we don't want to do anything else, asakti. Even if you give us $1 million, we're not going to go back to the city, we want to stay here. This is my service to Srila Prabhupada. And this is the best thing for my family and my children and for you too. And that's very convincing. That will be the best preaching for these projects will be simply to live on them and stay on them and go through all the difficulties which will inevitably arise. And just go on year after year and be happy. Be happy by living simply and chanting Hare Krishna and not desiring anything else. My child has to be a PhD or a multimillionaire. I'd be very happy to see my child growing up and plowing the fields. He could have been an engineer. So, no, this is better. This is best. This is what we want to do. Women maybe knitting sweaters. You have to buy the needles. Maybe you can make the knitting needles yourself. We're very happy like this. Be happy. And then you become attached, and then I don't know how you can exactly relate bhav and prem. It's living on the land. Well, the whole idea is to develop Krishna prem, but yeah, the result is there. The result is there that the atmosphere is created but Krishna is attractive. So when Krishna is pleased to manifest himself through your efforts to serve him in this way, then people will be attracted. I know myself when I first came to the temple of ISKCON, Radha Gokulananda temple near London, it was immediately attractive to me. And it's just the whole atmosphere, created, just the devotees, it wasn't an intellectual thing, it was just everything. The devotees are so happy, that was noticeable. Happy in a way that's completely different to anything that I'd ever seen or experienced or imagined before. And you walk in the door, and then even though it's quite a long way from the temple where the incense is burning, the whole atmosphere is permeated by this beautiful incense smell, which is common in India, but not in the West. And I'd smelled incense before, but it was this horrible stuff that my sister used to burn. I don't know if she would call it, smell like pig stool or something like that. You know, there's some incense, it smells really horrible. So that was the kind of incense that the hippies used to, somehow or other, they used to use in their so-called meditation. But this incense was, it's just something beautiful. And then the deities and the prasadam, and then the philosophy, that was the final knockout blow. It makes sense. For the first time in my life, I heard someone say something that makes sense. I never expected to hear it. I didn't know what the sense was, but when I heard it, I knew it. So like that, the whole atmosphere, so attractive. We can't artificially do that. If we're all just trying to be nice, that's good. It's better than trying to be nasty. But it's not just this be nice and smile at each other. It's not the real Atmananda that comes from surrender to Krishna, the happiness of the soul that comes from surrender to Krishna. That might even come by, just like I used to hear about one of my godbrothers, who's a famous cook. I won't give any more clues. But if in the kitchen, if people did things stupidly, He might, for instance, just, if they're a male, grab them, put them up against the wall and chastise them like that, shout at them, "Arr!" But at the time, you wouldn't be very happy with it. But in retrospect, it didn't happen to me. Not that particular thing. But in retrospect, you can understand, well, he's very concerned about everything in this kitchen must be perfectly done for Krishna. And if anyone does something which is grossly against that principle, he's not going to allow it. So that kind of atmosphere. I'm just giving this example to show that this artificial smile and be nice is a long, long way from the real atmosphere of wanting to do everything to please Krishna, which it might have some aspect of it which is superficially not very pleasing. It might be displeasing. But because the whole atmosphere is permeated, we must do everything to please Krishna. That's the whole motive and purpose. And then you get the prema. That is the sin, or at least bhav. And so that the whole atmosphere is one in which we're all here to cooperate to serve Srila Prabhupada and Krishna. It's a very simple principle, but it energizes everything with pure, just that simple sutra, Krishna te kila cheshta. Everything is meant for Krishna. Everything we're doing here is meant for the pleasure of Krishna. Wiping the backside of the baby who just passed stool. All for the pleasure of Krishna. You can see everything connected with Krishna because we're raising this child to serve Krishna. So it all becomes connected. Nitya yoktasya yogina. This is yoga. Someone may be doing yoga by putting their legs up behind their neck. And the mother, she's wiping the backside of her baby. She's a better yogi if she's doing it for Krishna. With the clear understanding that Krishna has sent this child and I am supposed to, this is my duty as mother, not to be, naturally attachment is there, but this child is sent by Krishna, is meant for the service of Krishna, and therefore I'm raising this child to be a servant of Krishna. And the Vaishnava, everything becomes connected to Krishna. So that atmosphere is created and becomes very, very attractive. And others can appreciate that. They'll be drawn into that. This palpably spiritual atmosphere in which everyone is doing everything for the pleasure of Krishna. And that has to be promoted all the time. Why are we doing this? We're doing this for the service of Krishna. Shortly after joining the movement, I was put onto cleaning the stairs. That was about the first day when I came. I had no idea why I was there or what I was doing or any such thing. And my mother always used to want me to clean the stairs, and I hated it. So I said, oh no. I thought that philosophy was good, but I don't want to do this. And then the devotee came up and was quite angry and said, I'm going to show you how to clean the stairs for Krishna. I thought, oh, really? Yeah, okay. It's for Krishna. All right. Because I was thinking, I'll clean the stairs. I hate cleaning the stairs. But no, it's for Krishna. Oh, all right. Then it becomes a completely different proposition. Hare Krishna. We'll finish there. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Looks like you're ready to ask a question. Is that right? Oh, Bhajana Kriya. Ha, 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 ha. Sadhu Sangha, yeah, I was too eager to jump into the Anatta Nivritti. Yeah, Bhajana Kriya. Yeah, there's certain things that do's and do nots. So, we can study this also from others who have done it. How to do. We can study from others who have done farming. We don't have to think that we have to wait for some revelation within the heart about how to grow potatoes. We can learn from people who have done it before. Even establishing communities, there's some points we can learn from, even from non-devotees, some points. The do's and do nots. Some points, like for instance, if they don't keep people in the community who are not fully into it, who are not fully convinced. I just recently sent to the members of this group a link to someone had written the 13 commandments of establishing our communities. Did you all see that? And one of them was like that. Don't keep people who are not into it, who are going to act as a... They'll actually make life more difficult for everyone unless they're fully prepared to take part in the community. And there are other things. He said, maintain your difference. keep a strong sense of identity that we are different and we want to be different. Otherwise you'll just gradually merge into the surrounding society. And keep in mind your purpose, why you're doing this. Keep it very strongly in mind. Otherwise, again, you're just going to merge. So these are points we can learn from these were given by Dmitry Orlov, who's a fairly well-known writer in the alternative world of today. As far as I understand, he's not a theist. But you can also learn things from atheists if we're selective. I recently came across something by Bertrand Russell, who was a committed atheist and a philosopher of atheism and a womanizer. I think he officially married three women or maybe four in his lifetime. But he made a very interesting point, which, well, whoever he may be, we can apply it or take it at least as a word of caution for our ISKCON. He said, I'm paraphrasing, that organizations tend to change beyond the recognition of their founders. And he gave the example of the church. He said that Jesus would be astonished to see the church. And he said even Paul, because Paul himself would have astonished Jesus with how he completely revamped the teachings of Jesus. But he said even Paul, who did a hatchet job on Jesus, he didn't say that, I said that, would be astonished to see the church, what it became. Saint Francis of Assisi, famous for his living simply and having no possessions. Not even the monks following him weren't supposed to even live in any building. They're supposed to be like the six Goswamis, living under trees. But it's more difficult in Italy, where it gets pretty cold in the winter. But even within his lifetime, the monks following him had started building big monasteries and out of his control even in his lifetime. So there you go. So we can learn things from non-devotees. So the do's and do nots of Varnashram. There are many quotes from Prabhupada. For the details, we may examine what non-devotees have said about community building, farming, and so on.
How was that? You wanted to do Bhuti Bhava
Club here. Oh, that's a good one. Bhava. We had the artificial Gopi Bhava Club in Los Angeles with its reincarnations later on after Srila Prabhupada had left. But we have the real Gopi Bhava Club. There will be real gopis, means the wives of the cowherd men, and they'll be churning the butter and singing about Krishna. Taking the cow. Yes, Srila Prabhupada said that if they do this, if the women do this, he was talking about New Vrindavan, he said the duties of the women will be looking after children, churning butter. And he said if they churn the butter, they'll become very healthy and their breasts will develop. He said modern women, you remember reading that? Nodding on. I said previously, he said the modern women, I'm just quoting Prabhupada, said they don't have developed breasts because they live unnatural lives. Okay. Hare Krishna. All right, we better say so. I better not end the lecture on that note. Yeah.
There's a question from yesterday's class.
Yeah.
You said that one reason that devotees can stay back in the city is for preaching.
Grassroots devotees can stay in the city for preaching.
One reason. So, this So if they have to work a lot to stay there at that position, but there are going to be a lot of donation, help
the devotees, people. Upper middle class, they have to work a lot, but they make a lot of money, but they have to work hard to get it, but they can give lots of donations.
So should our advice be...
Sure, advice to be...
For them it appears that if they move to the farm, they will get more time, and for their Krishna...
For their own Krishna consciousness is better, but they won't give us so much money.
Yeah, so
let them work like asses and pigs and give us the money. Should we recommend? We'll have to see in each individual case. But I would still, in general, recommend that Tyaktva Turnamas Shesha Mandalapati Srinin Sada Tuchavat. With this, but we don't say Bhutva Dina Ganesha Ko Karunaya Kopina Kanta. We don't say that you have to live like six Goswami. You can live with your family, but very simply. That will be very big preaching. If people who have everything the world has to offer, but they leave it behind as tuchavat, insignificant, to lead a very simple life in the service of Krishna. I personally think it'll be much more big preaching than encouraging other people to try to become Krishna-conscious-ized mudhas. Living the lifestyle of a mudha, working for some big mudhas, and earning money, and squeezing in some chanting Hare Krishna here and there. There'll be much bigger preaching if they can happily leave all that and not even advertise it. If someone's living as a very humble devotee among all the devotees, and you don't even notice them, and someone just points out, hey, you know, he used to be a multimillionaire. Really? And it becomes very big preaching. Just like Ambarish, he has so much money. But if you meet him, he doesn't walk around with a big badge saying, I'm from a multi-millionaire family. He just behaves very normally and naturally, and that's actually, he doesn't make any big thing. I'm such a big man of the world. And that's more appreciated, that he's not enamored by it. He's not, I gave up so much to be a Krishna devotee. If then they're clearly not enamored by it. They're not holding it in their mind. I made much more sacrifice than you. You're just here because you need some chapatis. I'm here because I'm a great renunciant. Oh, just give it up as insignificant. Whether you're rich or poor, it's all insignificant. It's just in the waves of time, sometimes someone is a big man and sometimes someone is a small man. It has no ultimate meaning. So don't make a big thing out of it. That is bigger preaching. Srila Prabhupada mentions in his Nectar of Devotion about some rich man from Calcutta who used to beg at the homes of his, even people who had been his enemies, to build the temple. He said in Vrindavan that, no, I know it wasn't for building temple, just for his maintenance. That must be that Shah, what's his name? Lal. There's that temple that Radharaman were going to move into, but they just stayed where they were. He made some beautiful temple in Vrindavan. Spent all his money. Then he was living as a renunciant. That's well known. I just can't. Lal Shah, something like this. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur also, he personally went door to door begging. Like that. So in general, I would encourage anyone who's got the courage and the conviction, then come out. But we may see individual cases. It's not stereotyped that everyone has to do this or that. And we may not encourage everyone to move for various reasons to the farm. They may not be mentally ready for it, or their family members may not be ready for it, or there may be other reasons also. But in general, we want to encourage this, definitely. Kundan Lal Shah, you just looked it up on in the Nectar of Devotion. Oh, is it? You looked up Lal Shah and it came up. I wonder if that's the same Kundan Lal who's described in Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav. I don't know. You must remember, there's a beautiful all-marble temple in Vrindavan. Maybe you're not aware of that. He built that for Radharaman, but then they didn't move. They wanted to stay there. If you want to make an encyclopedia of Vrindavan, you can take 200 scholars, set them to work, and they can work all their life, and by the end of their life, if they're working hard, they might have covered 1%. So much, every grain of dust is a history there. There is just so much in Vrindavan. All Puri, I don't know, there's any place, if you take the whole Vrajamandal, so much, and all the different sampradayas and the temples and the sadhus and the leelas. And, it's just so much. Every moment there are all kinds of Krishna conscious activities going on there, seen and unseen. Hare Krishna. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.